Now, and we're going to get going. I'm going to share my screen. And I just want to say, too, I'm really psyched to see you all. Thank you so much for joining me. This is like it's a very epic time, right? And it's a very epic year. I've been wanting to do this talk for a while. It's been on my mind, but quite honestly, I chickened out in June. I was going to, and then just kind of went, no, wait, I don't know what I'm going to say. And so here I am in October on Halloween, finally pulling it together. But it's been a very intense year, and I've said this more times than one, that astrology saves my sanity. If I didn't have the perspective of astrology, which brings in history and mythology and psychology and all sorts of things, all sorts of ways of getting perspective and sort of getting out of just our own personal experience. If I didn't have that, I don't know how I would be faring this year, because it's been a difficult year. Even if it's been a good year for you in some ways, likely you've dealt with some of your own challenges, emotional or otherwise. So that's the reason behind this, was to just give us all a little bit of a little breathing space around the events of the year. And Halloween seemed like a good time to do it, because Halloween is the modern, I don't know how other cultures look at it, but in ours, in America, it's a very Americanized version of a truly ancient and holy day. Halloween is built on top of Samhain, which is a traditional Celtic holiday of death and rebirth, endings and beginnings, and visionary magic, is the way Asia Suler puts it. And there is a slide at the end with the list of resources I've used, some books and some websites. And so if you see something and there's something referenced, it's probably gonna be in that last slide, so you can find it if you like. So Samhain, this is the time of year where, in the ancient Celtic tradition, this was the new year. Just as sunset began a new day, the sunset of the year began a new year. So we're going into the darkest time of the year. This is what's known as a cross-quarter holiday. It's halfway between the equinox and the solstice. So in that pagan wheel of the year, there are eight holy days, essentially 8 days marking the sun's journey around the earth from our perspective. And this is one of them. And this was one of the major ones. And it's sort of the counterpart to Beltane, which is in May, which is the celebration of the light coming back. And whereas Beltane is the celebration of fertility and the beginning of fertility, now we're in that sort of end of the harvest, time to go inward, time to go in. And almost in a lot of ways, this is also a good time to reevaluate the year, right? As we go into the darkness, can we evaluate what's been going on? And we'll talk about it, but with Mars in its retrograde cycle still, and Mercury actually in its retrograde cycle still right now, those also point to going inward and kind of looking inward and looking back and evaluating. So that's part of the reason for doing it today. The other thing is that one of the things that you hear often about this time of year, it is a time to celebrate the dead, meaning our ancestors. And it's a time, according to lots of tradition, that when the world that's underneath and behind and hidden is the most accessible to us. The veils are the thinnest. So this is a good time to pay attention to what's going on underneath and behind. And that's, of course, what astrology does in a lot of ways, is let us look into the dark and look beyond what we can see into what's going on behind. So this is just a picture of a place in Ireland, one of the more holy places in Ireland, where Samhain has been celebrated for, well, centuries, millennia is more like it. And again, the citation will be in the resources, but the rituals and ceremonies carried out by these, the Celts, the pre-Christian Irish is what they call it, offered assurances to people that the power of darkness would be overcome. I think this is a little bit whitewashed, if you will. But there, it is that celebration of knowing that even as we're going into the dark, we're celebrating that we're in a big cycle. And if there was one thing to kind of take away from today, it would be that what we're talking about is cycles. We have been here before as human beings. So we're going to be looking at these cycles and knowing that just as the sun will start to get brighter again after the solstice, life will get brighter, things will change, things will shift, and there is an order and a pattern to all of it. So what we're going to do first is just look at who are the major players, who are the big actors, who are the stars of the show of 2020. And unlike most years, this year we don't have just one, we have several. In the last, I think I've got a printout somewhere here. I did like a 30-year printout of major conjunctions. And this year we have 5 in 1 year. And the only place, the only time that that gets even close, most years we don't have these big major conjunctions, and you'll see why as we go. But the only time that came close in the last 20 or 30 years is 2011, and it had 4, but they were all the same 2 planets. And here we have several different planets involved in these big picture conjunctions. So we're going to talk about who they are and get to know them a little bit. And I don't know, some of you will recognize all 3 of these. Most of you, I think, will recognize the one with the rings. The one with the rings up in the top right, that's Saturn, the ringed planet. Get some of its meaning from those rings, but also from its position in our solar system as the last visible planet. And then the one on the left, the really pretty blue and pink one, that's Jupiter. And then we have Pluto down on the bottom right. Pluto, smallest of all, tiny, in fact. Furthest out until you get to Ceres, which is one of the newly discovered planets, and also in many ways the most powerful of the actors here. And one of the principles in astrology is that the slowest and rarest wins. So the slowest planet has the most time to build up effect, which is why Pluto is considered like one of the most powerful influences in all of this. Even though Jupiter is by far the biggest planet in the solar system and was almost a sun in its on its own. So we're just gonna get to know them a little bit. Jupiter, the mythological character of Zeus is probably the best known. There are others, more ancient and more modern. But Zeus, and in almost all instances, Jupiter was known as the king of the gods. So whatever name it was called by, it was the king of the gods. And again, if you think about our solar system, Jupiter was the planet that wanted to be a sun. It has, I can't remember how many moons. I mean, I think there are actually hundreds of moons, but there are 60 or 70 that have names. And so it's almost like its own solar system. So when you think about Jupiter, you can just think about big and expanding and wanting to understand. Jupiter is very much about expanding our horizons, both physically, mentally, emotionally, otherwise. And Jupiter expands anything it touches. It has the reputation of being the greater fortune. It's called a benefic, meaning it's the bestower of blessings in traditional astrology. It's also one of the planets that brings order to chaos. You can think of Jupiter as sort of like natural law. And it rules 2 signs. Each of the traditional planets, the 7 inner planets, and sun and moon would be counted as quote unquote planets. has, well, actually, scratch that. Sun and moon, we call planets, all the other five rule two signs each. So Jupiter rules Sagittarius and Pisces. So it rules a masculine sign and a feminine sign. And we're talking about archetypes, not male, female. Sagittarius, a fire sign, a mutable sign, meaning it's at the transition of the seasons, as is Pisces at the transition of the seasons. Pisces is a water sign. So those are the two signs Jupiter rules. And that will become a little bit more important and relevant later on in the presentation. So Jupiter works on 12-year cycles. And the takeaway from Jupiter, what we're looking at with Jupiter, what it's pointing to is how are we going to find the meaning behind what's going on? And what story are we telling ourselves? Jupiter is the storyteller. So that when we see Jupiter getting activated, we can start looking at what we believe, what our stories are, how we're making meaning of a situation. Then the greater in fortune, Saturn, the ringed planet, the furthest visible planet. So for the ancients, Saturn bounded the known universe. So bounded meaning it created the boundaries and the limits of human life until, of course, the discovery of the telescope and some of the other technology that we have now that allows us to see beyond Saturn. It's a planet that contracts and restricts. It's about isolation and solitariness, but its higher meaning is as our inner teacher, our inner authority, and its purpose, in Caroline Casey's words, is to help us insource what we have outsourced to others. So, and one of the ways we can see what we have outsourced to others is to see what we fear. What you fear is your master. And your job, or Saturn's encouragement to you, is to find a way to insource your mastery and your authority so that those boogeymen out there aren't creating fear in you. It's about helping you take a charge and authority of your own life. Saturn is, of the inner planets, it's also the slowest moving, again, because it's the furthest out, 29 years. And some of us will have familiarity with Saturn if we remember at age 29, unless you're too young to remember, 29 and 58 if you're old enough to remember too. But we get a Saturn return, meaning Saturn comes back to where it was when we were born. And that's one of the major transitions in life of maturation, of becoming an adult. So you can think of Saturn too as there's I usually don't like it when we make up new words or put turn nouns into verbs, but the word adulting I get a kick out of. So Saturn is the planet of adulting. Then we have Pluto, again the smallest but most powerful. Pluto also, so Pluto's the Roman name, Hades is the Greek name. So Hades, where I think we all know a little bit better than Pluto, god of the underworld, Pluto and Hades, the words translate to mean riches and wealth. And you can think of the underworld hiding the real wealth. And it's very much about our life force. Pluto is, it's like a, sometimes called the higher octave of Mars. Mars is the animating force, you can think of it as what brings life, brings things to life, brings things to energy. Pluto is sort of the deeper and bigger expression of that. And so what it points to is that what's hidden has the most power. And I know some of you probably have had that experience where you find something within you that you didn't really know was there. Maybe it's a scary memory, maybe it's some kind of a trauma, but once you see it and unlock it, it can bring you tremendous power. And that's a lot of what Pluto is about. It works through intensification. It works through elimination. So those are the two words that I would used to describe the action of Pluto. It's a stripping away of what we thought was necessary, and then find out that we can live without. And again, that higher meaning, our greatest power sourced from our greatest authentic desire. So where you see fear and anger often point to what you really truly want. And in our culture, so many aspects of desire for money, desire for sex, desire for procreation are taboo and are repressed. And that's why they have, in many cases, so much power. So again, the slowest planet wins, right? Pluto has a 248-year cycle. And you'll see again, as we keep going, why, you know, that has implications. It's why, for instance, this is such an epic time, because these three planets have not been together in Capricorn, the sign of Capricorn, for 800 years. All right, so now we're going to just take a quick look. I didn't bring you a picture of Uranus. It's also kind of got its own beauty. But Uranus, as Thomas and I were mentioning at the beginning before the call, Uranus is one of, actually today is a very, it's a good day to understand what Uranus feels like. If you're feeling a little restless or stirred up, or your nervous system's a little bit unbalanced, your stress level's a little bit more than perhaps you expected, maybe you didn't sleep well last night, Uranus was exactly within three, what's known as arc minutes, a tiny fraction away from the moon at the full moon, which was just an hour and a half ago, or maybe not even that, hour and some ago. So what that means is Uranus, because the moon tends to focalize and concentrate the energy of whatever's going out there, we will likely feel Uranus much more intensely today and these few days, and be interesting to watch the news. Because Uranus, it's been in Taurus since about May of 2018. We'll talk about Taurus in a moment. Uranus is the great awakener. The purpose, if you will, of Uranus is liberation, freedom. It's the innovator. It rules technology and electricity and things in the sky to a large degree. And so, it works in a sudden fashion. It works, lightning is something that's ruled by Uranus. So it means that when we have Uranian experiences, typically they're quite sudden. This is another one of those planets. It has an 84-year cycle, which I forgot to put on here, an 84-year cycle. And at ages 21, 42, 63, 84 is when we kind of get a feeling for Uranus. Like we may get a sudden awakening or a sudden understanding, or something may come to light or come up. And it can be an internal experience or an external experience at those ages. And age 42-ish, right? It's usually not exact because the orbits aren't perfectly circular. Age 42 is when we often get what's called our midlife crisis. And that's a Uranian time where all of a sudden we realize that we put ourselves in some kind of a box and we want out. We want to get out because we want to be us. So that's Uranus's highest intention, is to help us wake up to be truly authentic as ourselves. And then Uranus in Taurus is where Uranus has been since 2018 and will be till 2026. So it's about a 7-year cycle. Because these planets nearly always will retrograde, apparently move backwards for a short period of time. They may be back and forth, but that's essentially 7 years in a sign. And Taurus is the fixed, meaning solid, stationary. Fixed signs come in the middle of a season when you're really in the heart of the season. And it's earth, meaning it's very material, very grounded, very much about material resources. And Taurus has to do with agriculture and food and money, a material resource, natural resources in general, and our relationship with our bodies and our five senses. So when this is part of the backdrop of how everything's playing out, and this is certainly what's up today, is this Uranus and Taurus bringing to light this particular configuration with this full moon, is one of the questions that Uranus and Taurus is asking us is, what relationship are we going to choose with nature, our bodies, and the earth? And specifically, more specifically, is how are we going to balance and integrate technology and innovation and all these new kinds of things which are associated with Uranus with the natural world and with our material world. And actually, as I'm talking about it, and another thing I would say is that Uranus is that higher knowing. It's our intuitive knowing to some degree, and our knowing that's connected with the non-material plane. So that's another kind of theme that's up for this 7-year period. And it's actually quite relevant to what's going on in the world right now, is that if you go look at some of the editorials and the writers about the polarization, particularly in our country, between the parties and the two sides and the quote unquote right, quote unquote left. There's a lot of talk about coming back to there's a lot of talk about part of the problem being all this woo stuff out there and people, you know, trusting their own intuition and over science, or their experience of alien abductions over the fact that there's no evidence for it. And that's part of what's going on, I think, with this Uranus and Taurus, is a shakeup in what we know and how we relate to our material world, and how we perceive, balance, and integrate those sort of wild out there woo experiences with what we've always known in a very material sense. And this will become even more relevant over the next year, as Aquarius, which is a sign that's associated with Uranus in modern times, becomes more activated. And again, we're going to go into that. And just one more note too, which I didn't say, is you will be receiving the recording and a copy of my slides. So I know some of you may want to be writing things down, but don't feel like you need to copy anything on the slides, because you will get a copy of them. Okay, so to keep going. So we've talked about the players. We haven't talked about all of them. We still have Mars to talk about. Now we're going to talk about the world stage, the stage, the backdrop. We're going to talk about the zodiac signs. So most of what is happening this year is happening in the sign of Capricorn. Capricorn is, it's the first sign of winter. So it's known as a cardinal sign, and cardinal means initiating, it means starting. So Capricorn, we come into Capricorn season at the winter solstice. And so it's the beginning of winter, technically. Capricorn is an earth sign, so we know it's associated with the material world, with the earth herself. Feminine polarity, which means that it's more dark, more receptive, less active and out there. It's a cool sign rather than a hot sign. And ruled by Saturn. Remember, Saturn is who we talked about earlier. Capricorn is, most of us, through popular astrology, think of Capricorn as the goat. We think of Capricorn as the plodding, head down, climb the mountain, serious, ambitious. Those are the things we think about. But Capricorn is actually what's known as the sea goat, which means that there's a connection to those deep waters of where we're all connected, where we're all sort of part of the same ocean. We are all manifestations of the same ocean. And so there's a part of Capricorn that's about kind of bringing the invisible into form. And so you can, and it's also very much connected with natural wisdom. And the shamanic astrology people talk about Capricorn as the sign that's related to the council, for instance, the Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers. So Capricorn, because it's the last earth sign, it's very much about wisdom and mastery. It has a connotation of tradition. It works through contraction and crystallization. But again, similar to some of the purposes of Saturn, in Capricorn, you find your strength and your authority from within. At least that's the conscious expression of it. So so Capricorn, those of us that have a ton of Capricorn typically are very earth related, very connected to nature and the wisdom that we get through nature. Now, the not so conscious expression of Capricorn, because it has to do with mastery and power, it's one of the signs that has the most to do with power. The flip side, the dark side of power is control. And in our country this year, well, actually for quite some time, I think we could easily agree that we are seeing kind of the dark and then, well, maybe not so much the light, but we're seeing definitely the fact that power is confused with control. And we can certainly see that control and oppression are part of our history and part of what we're seeing so clearly now. And again, so control is like using your power through fear, right? Whereas the conscious expression of power is through what you love and what you love to share. That's true power. So that's Capricorn. And Capricorn is the stage, the primary stage for 2020 and the last couple of years. Pluto has been in Capricorn since 2008. Saturn has been in Capricorn since December of 2017 with a quick trip back out. Jupiter has been in Capricorn since, I think, early this year. I don't remember what date it actually went into Capricorn. But all of these big events, save one of them at the end of the year, are happening in Capricorn. So this is the energy we're working with, the primary energy we're working with. This contraction, crystallization, power, control, authority. And again, like Saturn, what we're getting the opportunity to do is remake how we look at power and how we take power. And Capricorn itself is getting a bit of a work out and work over, but that's perhaps another class. So the other sign that's going to be more, the new stage, if you will, after the end of this year is Aquarius. And we've had a little taste of it in the middle of the year when Saturn went into Aquarius. But here's the sign where we're going to, if you will. And Aquarius is also ruled by Saturn traditionally, but you remember I said Uranus has some real importance to kind of what's going on. Uranus is said to be the modern ruler, meaning that Aquarius, so the rulership of a sign, for those of you that aren't as geeky as some of us, rulership means natural affinity for. It means a planet is at home in that sign. And even though Capricorn and Aquarius are very different signs, Saturn is at home in both of them. Both of them have to do with our relationship with society. Both Capricorn and Aquarius have to do with wisdom, whereas Capricorn is the mastery and the creation of wisdom, the gaining of wisdom. Aquarius is the sharing of wisdom. So Aquarius, most of us know as the water bearer. It's pouring out the waters of wisdom. That's the water that Aquarius has. It is not a water sign, it's an air sign. And air is it's associated with connection and thought and ideas and creation, like innovation, new ideas. Also, there's a piece of this that's about liberation and expansion as well. And again, that's where the Uranus connection comes in. The squiggles of Aquarius are typically thought of as the squiggles of water, but there are some who point to the squiggles as two snakes, because snakes are associated with wisdom, or were way back when, in the ancient time, pre-patriarchal times, really. So Aquarius, you can think of the waters of wisdom. And the shadow, and again, this is, we're talking about where we're going. We've been solidly Capricorn for a while, but a lot of these big planets are moving into Aquarius over the next several years. The shadow, the unconscious expression of Aquarius, is a detachment, like a thinking, like going up into those higher places to look down at the world and not feeling what it's like to be in the world. Aquarius, another unconscious expression, is being prone to groupthink. Revolution, it can be both a higher or a conscious and an unconscious expression. Revolution and rebellion are really useful, right? We don't get anywhere as a world without people refusing to tolerate what's no longer tolerable. But it's easy to get caught up sometimes in being a rebel for the sake of being a rebel. And that would be the unconscious expression of Aquarius. And again, that's as we move into this more Aquarian age, these are things to keep in mind, is what's driving us? What's our real motivation? So, all right. So where we are today in 2020 is at a turning of an age. And that's not too dramatic of a statement, right? Given all the things going on, certainly in the world, we talk about this being unprecedented. It's not, right? This has happened before, but not in recent history. So we're at a turning of the ages, and some people would say we're going from the age of Pisces to age of Aquarius. And of course, I think there's some truth to that. And different people, different astrologers and different astronomers will give you different dates of when we actually make that transition. But I think most people would agree that we're in the initial stages of it. And most big life transitions are not like turning of a switch, right? It's not flip a switch and you go from Pisces to Aquarius. It's this sort of back and forth and blending of the energies and trying to let go of one and start taking a hold of the other. And that's how most of our lives work. And that's certainly how this transition time is working. This is the fulcrum. 2020 is the fulcrum of these shifts, but it's not necessarily like flipping a switch. So here's a quote that I particularly like about sort of summarizing what we're seeing, what we're feeling. And this is focused specifically on relationships. And I think that makes sense because everything is relationship, right? Even our, whether it's, no matter what it is, we are in relationship with it. Our stories, our thoughts, our feelings, other people, events, we are in relationship with all these things. And what she says is the relationships that we're holding together illusions of stability in social, personal, and biospheric patterns in place are melting, tearing, cracking. These are all Uranian and Plutonian kinds of words, bursting into flames, that's a Martian kind of words, and vaporizing. This unfastening is shredding thousands of years of accumulated illusions of separation. So here's what I see as a kind of a hopeful look at the destructiveness that we see around us. many things are falling apart. I think most of us are feeling that, seeing that. Here's one person's take on what exactly is falling apart. You know, Capricorn is a sign of institutions and buildings and foundations, and they're both inside and outside. Capricorn is a sign of stability and to some degree patterns. And so what we're seeing is those institutions that have been building for hundreds of years, centuries, are falling apart and shifting. And her way of summarizing it is that all those institutions have helped to build these illusions of separation, separation of us from our bodies, separations of us from the earth, separations of human from nature, all of which are artificial and false. Okay, so the big events. Here's, we're just going to talk about the big planetary events now. So we've gotten familiar with the players, most of them. So let's take a look at what they're doing. So the first, there were a couple of eclipses. There was an eclipse on Christmas last year and another eclipse early in the year that started to catalyze some of these events. But the major happening that started off 2020, right at the beginning of the year, January 12th, was the conjunction of the two heavyweights that we've been talking about, Saturn and Pluto. Saturn, the furthest out of the known and visible planets, Pluto, the furthest out of the invisible planets. And so what we've got, Saturn is gravity, contraction, restriction, those kinds of energies meet the underworld lord of intensity and elimination and power and empowerment. And of course, the question is who gets empowered, right? Who gets the power? Who gets this intensification of power? And it's not really surprising that Saturn, planet of isolation, it's the hermit. It's also got that hermit archetype, and this underworld god would result in authoritarian measures, lockdowns. Just the very word is a very Saturn-Pluto word. Isolation, social distancing is a very Saturnian way of looking at things. And so that, you know, that's kind of what we've experienced among other things. There was a medical astrologer who did predict a pandemic this year. She's the only one I know of, actually, who literally predicted a pandemic. And she said that, I think, back last fall or last summer. And Saturn, Pluto, Jupiter being there, and then we're going to talk about the nodes. I know this is a super small chart, but Saturn is here, the second planet from the left in Capricorn. These are all in Capricorn. All these planets here are in Capricorn. And then here's Pluto. So Saturn and Pluto together on January 12th. And this happens every 35-ish years. So it's one of the rarest conjunctions. It's not the rarest, but it's one of the rarest conjunctions because of the speed with which these planets travel. And there's Jupiter nearby. And one of the things we're going to talk about is that one of the reasons that this has been such an intense kind of period of letting go and feeling like karmic shifts is that this little horseshoe-shaped thing is called the South Node. And we're going to talk about the nodes in a couple of minutes. But it's the South Node in shorthand is the symbol of karma. And so you'll see that the last time this lineup of planets, specifically Jupiter, Pluto, and Saturn came together in Capricorn was in the year 1284. But at that time, the North Node was there. So it was a little bit different feeling than all things falling apart. There was more creating at that time than destroying. So then the next major conjunction, and there are three of these, we'll get three of these, and the third one is not until November 12th, which just about a week after the election. This is Jupiter. Remember Jupiter, the king of the gods, and Pluto. And they're coming, they've come together twice already this year. And this is the planet of expansion meets the Lord of the underworld. The planet of opportunity meets the eliminative force. It's the storyteller meets the dark god. And so what have we seen? Well, expansion of power, right? That's those two words fit well with part of what we've seen going on. We've also seen great generosity, if you can call it that, with the big outrush of money to people that had lost jobs and been restricted and were struggling. We've also seen this intensification of stories and beliefs. We've seen the intensification of I'm locking into my view of the world and that person's locking into their view of the world, and there's no room to go. There's nowhere to go. So that's another Jupiter-Pluto theme. And again, there's the conscious expression and the unconscious expression. And we've seen maybe a little bit of both. And you can make up your own minds, of course, about that. But those are the energies that have been coming together like this. I'm going to get my notes because there's a couple things I want to make sure I don't forget to say. Let's see what's next here. So let's go back for just a moment to Jupiter and Saturn. So this is the chart for the third and final conjunction of Jupiter and Pluto. I may end up repeating myself a little bit later, but these three planets have not traveled together like this. And actually they weren't even this close then, since, as I said, 1284. And what's interesting, there's a couple things interesting about that. One is that it's such a rare occurrence for these three planets to be in Capricorn at the same time. But the other thing that's interesting, and there's a story I want to tell here, is that Jupiter was the king of the Olympians. Saturn was the king of the Titans. Saturn was the father of Jupiter in ancient mythology. And Saturn, so Saturn was married to Rhea, one of the earth goddesses, and Saturn was afraid that he would be overthrown by one of his children, just as he had overthrown his father. And similar to what happened with Saturn and his siblings when they were born, they were shoved back into the earth. Earth was mother, until Saturn finally overthrew his father. In this case, Jupiter, Saturn ate his children. In ancient myth, Saturn would eat each of his children because he didn't want them to have the opportunity to overthrow him. Well, as you can imagine, his wife, Rhea, got sick and tired of him eating all their children. And she hid Jupiter, Zeus, when he was born, and substituted a stone in his place, and Saturn swallowed the stone instead of the child. So when Jupiter grew up, he brought a potion to Saturn that essentially made Saturn throw up all of his children. And they weren't dead by any means. They all turned into more Olympians that then overthrew the Titans after 10 years of war. But the reason I bring that up is because if you look at where Jupiter has been for much of the year, it's been in between Saturn and Pluto. Right now it's behind Saturn and Pluto, and then it will be in between them again soon until the solstice. And actually, it'll be between them after November 12th. So what we've got going is this Jupiter trapped. If you can, you know, if you want to use the mythology, it's in Saturn's belly. It's in Saturn's sign. Jupiter is in Saturn's sign, in Saturn's belly. It doesn't have its opportunity to be the great benefic where it is and how it is right now. And so a lot of what we've been sorting through this year is this, there's no room to expand. It's very difficult to grow and expand. I don't know how many of us have these big ideas of things we want to create or things we want to learn or things we want to do, and we're just not able to get traction yet. And part of that is this Jupiter still inside the belly of Saturn. And when we get to the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction, I'll talk a little bit more about this myth and how it, you know, where it goes. But that's just something to think about. And maybe feel into, has that been true for you? Has that felt like that? Is that, does that resonate? So one of the other major events, if you will, is this Mars retrograde in Aries. So Mars, Mars is the next planet outside of the Earth. As I said earlier, it's the animating force. It is in its home sign of Aries. So Mars is the god of war. Aries has some of that same connotation. They're both, so Mars is the red planet, it's a hot, fiery planet. It's the lesser malefic. So where Saturn is the big bad guy, Mars is the little bad guy. Where Mars activates things, it often leads to like inflammation, both physical and otherwise. It can mean eruptions and violence. And in fact, some of the dates this year that involve Mars have been very literal eruptions of violence. Or in the case of Mars conjoining Pluto, I don't remember what date that was. That was the explosion in Beirut, right? Something that had been there and potential for a long time, but when Mars and Pluto got together, it happened. And it's one of the, I think it's one of the most destructive explosions in history anywhere. So that's Mars is kind of, it's an action planet, but it's been retrograde since early September, and it will go direct in November. Mars. And what's unique about that, so again, the slowest and rarest winds, right? Mars only goes retrograde every couple of years. So Mars went retrograde in September. And the last time it went retrograde was 2 years ago in Aquarius. The last time it went retrograde in Aries was in the 80s. But the last time that it went retrograde in Aries and the entire period stayed within Aries was in the 40s. So again, rare. Therefore, having more meaning, more significance, more energy behind it. And so the other thing that's unique about this is that Mars usually travels through a sign in just a couple of months. It has a 2-year cycle, so it's not in a sign for very long. But here, because of its retrograde and the way the retrograde happens, it's in Aries for 6 months. So we have 6 months of this like hyper energetic, hyper hot period of time. And then the retrograde kind of sandwiched in there in this piece of Mars in Aries is a time where any retrograde period is a time of reevaluating. All the RE words can get assigned to it. Reevaluating, revisioning, revising, reviewing. So this Mars in Aries retrograde period has been an opportunity for all of us. Some of us may feel it more acutely than others. We will feel it in different parts of our lives, depending on where it is in our chart. It's a time to reevaluate how we use our energy. And I don't know about you, but that's certainly been something that's gone on for me this year, is reevaluating where am I giving my energy and where does it feel good to give my energy? What am I putting my life force into and where do I really want to be putting my life force into? And in Martian terms, I would say that this Mars retrograde and Aries period, layered on top of everything that's going on, is the warrior reevaluating what is worth fighting for. What is it worth fighting for? Where do I really want to put my energy? So that's one of the backdrops of the year. So the last kind of big, the last sort of big picture backdrops for 2020, and then we're going to get a little bit more into what's coming, is this, the nodes of the moon. And if I go back to a chart for a moment, I'm just going to point them out. They're the horseshoe-shaped symbols here. The south node is this upside down. South node looks like a bucket. You can think of south node bucket of karma. That's how you can remember the difference between south and north. Here's the north node. They're always exactly opposite. And so what the nodes are, they represent sort of an axis of evolution and karma. What they are astronomically is the axis along which the eclipses occur. And so the nodes are the places in the sky. They're not actual objects. They're just points in the sky where the moon's orbit around the Earth crosses the sun's path around the Earth, or the Earth's orbit around the sun, if you want to be more astronomically correct. But because the moon's orbit around the Earth is at an angle, there's only those two points where the moon's orbit crosses the path of the sun. And so when that happens, when the moon is along the, when the moon and the sun are next to the nodes, either together at a new moon or opposite each other at a full moon, that's when we get eclipses. So eclipses are like karmic triggerings and evolutionary triggerings, you can say. So where we are now is until June of this year, all the eclipses for the last year and a half have been in Cancer and Capricorn. So because the nodes, there's always two nodes, they work in polarity just as all the signs work in polarity. So until May or June of this year, the eclipses were sort of helping us release like traditions that are no longer working, help us release the structures that are no longer working, and help us find community. Cancer is very much about our tribe, maybe reconnect with our ancestors. I've noticed a lot of people doing ancestral healing work this last year or so, and that has, I think, a lot to do with that nodal axis and Cancer and Capricorn. All those eclipses that lit up that axis. And the other thing to think about with the Cancer Capricorn axis is that because those are cardinal signs, remember I said those are the initiating, activating signs that come at the beginning of a season, there was more energy to do, to act. Since May, and for the all of next year, the nodes are in Gemini and Sagittarius. And so One more thing I want to say. Capricorn ruled by Saturn, Cancer ruled by the moon. But Gemini, Sagittarius, Gemini ruled by Mercury, Sagittarius ruled by Jupiter. Remember, Jupiter is one of our major players. Sagittarius is the south node. Sagittarius is a sign of finding meaning and exploring and expanding into a bigger world, very similar to the energy and the activations of Jupiter. But Sagittarius is also the sign of the ideologue and the that like rigid ideological beliefs and like rigidified religions. And rigidified religions, not necessarily church-based, right? There are some ways that science has become a rigidified religion in some people's minds. And so what we've got here is we're bringing, whenever the south node is in the sign, it brings up the shadows. And so we're seeing the shadows of that Sagittarian belief system where everybody wants to concretize into a set of beliefs and then argue with the other side, rather than Gemini, which is the evolutionary way of managing right now, rather than Gemini of being curious. One of the highest expressions of that Gemini energy, that Mercury, that energy of the mind, is to be curious and inquisitive and wonder, gee, why are those, what's going on with these other viewpoints? Why do we have these other viewpoints? What is happening? Why do people think that? Why do people feel that? That's what we've been missing, and that's our evolutionary direction for this next year. And then one other thing I want to say about this mutable, so mutable means adaptable. Mutable signs come at the transitions of the seasons. Mutable means time to change and to shift. And so we have this whole coming year, and since May, June of this year, when the eclipses will be along this axis, and there's more room to adapt. There's more room to change our minds. There's more room to explore and be curious. There's more room for things to shift. And then we'll talk a little bit more about this axis when we get to the full moon, because it's in Taurus, and that means the sun's in Scorpio. So then in January of 2022, this nodal axis, this evolution of evolutionary axis, is going to shift yet again. It shifts every 18 months. And then the eclipses will be along the Taurus Scorpio axis. And that's a fixed axis. So that means more solidification, rigidification. And again, we'll talk more about that later. But this is, I think, the highlight for me is this time here is it's time to really start to be curious and explore and allow ourselves to wonder instead of being stuck and choosing a position. And here's a quote from one of my favorite astrologers, Lynn Bell, who in a presentation recently said, "It will be incredibly important to hold more than one point of view next year. It will be incredibly important to allow, to tolerate, to be curious about multiple points of view." Enough said, I hope. All right, so if anybody is dying to ask a question, I can take just a short break, although I'm talking longer than I thought I would, so I do want to keep going. But if there's something that's burning in your minds right now and you want to ask something, you're welcome to unmute yourself and ask it right now. And then we're going to go into part, the second, the kind of the looking ahead part. And if I don't hear anything, then I'm going to take silence as an assent that either you're totally overwhelmed, or this is great and you just want to keep going, or both. Okay, so what we're going to look at now we're about to get a taste of the age of Aquarius. So this next, as I said, the world, the platform is shifting from Capricorn, not entirely, but in to large degree. There will still be some very Capricorn stuff going on for the next couple of years because Pluto will still be there. But what we have is what's known as the Great Mutation. And the Great Mutation is the conjunction between Saturn and Jupiter. And in this conjunction happens every 20 years. So it's not the rarest, right? It happens every 20 years, but the signs are divided into four elements. We have earth signs, fire signs, water signs, air signs. And the reason this particular conjunction between Saturn and Jupiter on the solstice, another very powerful day. It is, the reason it's such a big deal is because for the last 200 years, these conjunctions have been in earth signs, with one exception in 1980. Now, after this December, these conjunctions will be in air signs for 200 years. And that's the way it works. We get these 20-year cycles within a 200-year cycle, which then, of course, gives us an 800-year cycle, right? 200 years in earth, 200 years in air. Can't remember, I think 200 years of fire next, I'm not sure, and then 200 years of water. And so we're starting a 20-year cycle, a 200-year cycle, and an 800-year cycle on the solstice, the day that the sun moves into Capricorn. And the conjunction itself, here it is, Jupiter and Saturn, is at 0 degrees of Aquarius. So it's at the very initial beginning energy of Aquarius. And these 0 degrees are extra powerful degrees as are the 29th degree, the first and last degree of a sign. You can think of the first degree as opening the door to that sign and like expanding into the possibility of Aquarius. And then here we have the sun at 0 degrees of the solstice. So a very significant day in the year, right? It's the day when the sun stands still and gets ready to start going from dark back into light. And so here we have, this is called the great mutation of Saturn and Jupiter coming together. And so what that means, again, it is a taste of this age of Aquarius, but it's a shift from the industrial age to what comes next, with technology, with information, with the society and how we relate to each other. Aquarius is that idealist, that innovator. Remember, we talked about Aquarius a few slides back. And so the next 200 years won't be all in Aquarius, but it will be in Aquarius, Gemini, and Libra. So all about relationship and society and information and stories that we, you know, beliefs to some degree. But we've already, so 1980, if you think back to 1980, we've had a little bit of a taste of what this great mutation, these conjunctions and air signs might mean, because that was essentially the birth of the internet. And I think if you think back to that period of time, you probably, those of you that were around that period of time and had grown up by then to enough to see it, you could see that there was like a shift. PCs started to come in. In fact, I think the first time I ever saw a computer was about 1980 or 1981, maybe a little bit before, 78 or 79. So that gives you a little bit of a feel for what's coming. And again, there's a conscious expression and an unconscious expression that we talked about when we talked about Aquarius, but that's where we are now with this great mutation. And that's the December solstice. That's the winter solstice here in the Northern Hemisphere. So that'll be a significant day, starting a significant transition. So a couple of like summary thoughts. I just threw this in because it's an interesting statement out of medical astrology that pandemics tend to occur when tyrants are in control. Saturn and Pluto in the South Node in Capricorn is very much about potential tyranny, right? That abuse of power. Our old structures, traditions, institutions are breaking down. We're getting the opportunity to grow up. This is a cycle of maturity as a collective. And that's that Saturn, all those planets in Capricorn. And then the other thing is that we're really in between the old story and the new story. We'll start to see the new story in December with that conjunction, that great mutation. but we're really still in an in-between place. And again, we still have Jupiter stuck in between Saturn and Pluto until December as well. So the light at the end, what's interesting, one of the other interesting things, so I'm borrowing a statement out of a book on the Sabian symbols that was written by one of the fathers of modern astrology, Dane Rudyard. And each degree of the zodiac has a symbol associated with it. And these are intuitive downloads that that came to another astrologer in the early 20th century. And Dane Rudyard put it all in a book and explained some of the meanings. And I don't have the right picture. I have a pretty picture instead of the picture I should have. Is that the image for this particular symbol is a fully decorated Christmas tree. And the reason I'm bringing up this symbol is it's the degree at which the full moon occurred today. And it just seemed to summarize kind of where we are and what he says, what the way he describes that fully the hidden meaning behind this image of a fully decorated Christmas tree is that there is the ever-present possibility to transfigure the darkness and deprivation of the low point of a life cycle by celebrating the ever-remembered and always expected high moments of life. And again, what he says and how he summarizes is that this image of this Christmas tree evokes our undying faith in cyclic renewal. So as I said at the beginning, we're in a time where it helps to remember that our ancestors have been here before. And we are in cycles, and this is a cyclic renewal. And sometimes you have to knock the old out of the way before you can step into the new and find the new. Let's see, we actually talked about most of this. So I think in the interest of time, I'm going to keep going, except to maybe mention that we do have a little bit of tension next year between Saturn, the restrictive force, and Uranus, the freedom, the liberating force. Jupiter, one of the big heavy hitters of the year, is briefly going to move into its own sign of Pisces in May. And then once it gets, it'll go back out fairly quickly, but then it'll be back in Pisces at the very end of next year for all of 2022. So that's where we're going. The Saturn Uranus square, freedom versus restriction. And the last thing I'll mention before we move in, we have a sample chart. So if Allison has hung in there with me, I'm gonna get to that in the next moment. I just wanna point this out. This is two charts. In the middle, I've put in the chart of the United States, one of them. There's a couple of different ones that people use, but it's essentially the planets are in the same relationships. It's just the rising sign that would be slightly different. And here is, so in the middle is the United States, and on the outside is the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction in December. And I could have picked Election Day. I do have that chart somewhere. But the most notable thing here is that Pluto, god of the underworld, is coming back to where Pluto was in this chart of the United States when we were born as a country. So one of the reasons we're getting so much upheaval in our country is that we are in a big death and rebirth. That's essentially what's happening here. So that's just kind of like another piece of the backdrop to keep in mind as we go. And this Saturn-Jupiter conjunction is a south node. It's right near the United States south node. So again, might have a lot to do with releasing karma for us, might have some kind of karmic resonance significance for us as a country. I have no idea what that looks like in world events and sort of real life events. That just gives us an energetic peek. We can come back to this at the end if we want, but I want to, because I'm talking so much. I want to come back to Allison's chart. So I just wanted to put this in the context of one human being. And so Allison agreed to be that guinea pig when I drew her name from my little magic bowl. And so what we're going to do is we're just looking at her chart, and we're just going to look for where the major events happen in her chart. And so I know some of you are not as astro geeky as some others. This is Allison's ascendant here. This this is the eastern horizon because we're looking up at the sky. So the horizon is on our left. The east is on our left. Here's Allison's sun. She's an Aquarius sun. So 22, the year 22 is likely to be a big year for her because so much is going to be happening in Aquarius. And that the sun is one of our more sensitive parts. The big Capricorn contingent cabal, whatever you'd like to call them, all that Capricorn energy is up at the top of her chart. And this house here, here's the what's known as the midheaven. This is the highest point where the sun reaches its highest point in the sky on the day of her birth. The Capricorn contingent is in her 10th house, and this is the house of career and taking power in the world. And you can see she doesn't have any planets in Capricorn, but she's had a big taste of Capricorn energy this year because the planets in the sky are activating that part of her chart. So my, if I were going to guess, and she can come on in a moment and tell us, you know, how this resonates or doesn't. If I were going to guess, I would say that she's restructuring her career and how she shows up in the world. And it doesn't have to be like career. It's basically how you're dealing with the outside world and how you're coming into your authority and your mastery. That's this 10th house. And then the other thing that's immediately obvious to me is that Mars in retrograde has been entirely in her first house. And the first house has much to do with our identity and how we view the world, how the view world of the world views us. And because her moon, which is that emotional part of us, it has a lot to do with sort of the memories and memories and reactions that we carry in our soul. Because that's right here on her ascendant, I would think that there's like some emotional restructuring going on as well. And Capricorn and Aries, because they are in a dynamic square angle with each other, will be kind of activating each other throughout the year. So that's just a quick, brief look at her chart, but I want to see if Allison's here. I'm just going to stop my share for a moment. Did Allison? Great, you're there.
I'm still here. I really enjoyed this. Thank you. Yeah. Just to give some specifics, I think that illustrate what you saw in my chart. I wrapped up a career as a, I'm going to say, I wrapped up a career of doing what I thought I should be doing, like my social duty, and resigned that position, not knowing what I was going to do next, but that I needed a lot of internal work in order to identify that authentic expression of my being in the world.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a beautiful, very literal expression of all those energies.
So yeah, I feel very much astrology has created that big picture view for me, and so that I haven't had to participate as much in the fear.
Great.
Except yeah. Fear, yes. So yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, well, I was going to say with Mars and Aries, Mars and Aries in your first house, you know, one of the qualities of Mars is courage, right? Mm-hmm. And so that retrograde in your first house might have a lot to do with like helping you find your courage. So that, I think that's lovely the way you put that. Yeah, thank you. And thank you so much. So any questions or anything else you want to add?
Sure. Just, it's also, I've been following this, the retrograde across my ascendant and back, I think is a really interesting thing. I also have, doesn't show up in this chart, but my progressed new moon happened last summer. So I'm definitely in the new moon stage, and my progressed new moon is conjunct my natal moon and my ascendant. So I feel like I'm just like becoming a completely different person.
Wow. Yeah. No kidding. That's a completely fresh and new start. And with your moon conjunct your ascendant, and Mars basically will station direct on your ascendant, you know, within a degree, it's like, my guess is you're going to have so much energy. You're going to find so much energy on that, you know, you probably have had some, but it might have been a little bit more internal, and it might be almost like a slingshot when Mars goes direct again.
Well, I'm looking forward to that because I haven't felt much energy around very many things. So, yeah, it's been a very birth and death and rebirth time for my identity. Really feels like a dissolving sort of thing.
Yeah. 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 Well, we'll have to stay in touch. I would love to know how it goes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to go back to my screen and just, I think I have just one more, a couple more slides. I just wanted to take a look at the full moon, just because that's where we are right now. So here's when you look at a chart, for those that aren't, again, the non-geeks here, here's the sun, the circle with the dot. And at a full moon, the little crescent moon, is always exactly opposite from the sun. If they were closer to the horseshoes, we'd be having an eclipse, right? But we're not that close. But what's significant about this full moon is, I mean, there's lots of things, but the major thing is, here's Uranus, this little, it looks like it has an H on top because the man who is credited with discovering it, I can't remember his last name, but it began with an H. But Uranus is exactly, here you see 8 degrees, 41 minutes, 8 degrees, 38 minutes. That is a very, very close conjunction. And so the moon, again, amplifying that Uranian energy, that energy of like sudden reversals, shocking news, all sorts of things could be part of that. And so that's the major energy that we're dealing with. And then the full moon in Taurus. So Taurus is that fixed earth sign. Taurus is about the five senses. It's about material wealth, material resources. This could have some connotations around money, both individually and collectively. It could be lighting up some financial stuff. It could be lighting up, bringing attention to our relationships with our bodies. Full moons are a good time for letting go of things. So there may be some, maybe there's some material issues we need to kind of wipe out or get rid of, take off our plates. That's part of what we might be feeling here at the full moon. Let me see, I had some more notes. Let's see what I'm missing that I didn't say yet. It's also about the access of personal versus shared resources. So the full moon is lighting up our personal resources, like how we value ourselves. And Scorpio is the sign of debt and taxes and what we share with others. And so the other thing about this full moon is it might give us a little bit of a taste of what that Taurus Scorpio energy will feel like when the nodes shift in a year and a half or so. And the one other thing that I wanted to point out is that if you see these red lines are always the dynamic angles where things are in tension with each other. And then the blue lines are the angles where things are supporting each other. And I just want to focus on one more of the red lines. This is Mercury, the planet that has to do with communication, perception, the mind, information, analysis. Mercury is still retrograde until election day, which is an issue in interesting issue in and of itself. But right now it's in this tense angle with Saturn. So here we have the inward, backward, sort of messed up communication experience of Mercury in tension with the planet that restricts. So one of the things that came to me is this may be very well a time where there's more restriction on information. We've certainly seen censorship this year. Again, I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying it's something that has happened. You know, scientific studies that don't fit with what is going on, pulled down from websites, from medical websites. The, you know, Facebook and others like taking people off, deplatforming them. I never heard of that word till this year, deplatforming them. That's definitely a Mercury Saturn kind of thing. So we may see another wave of that. Or maybe we'll see stuff coming back up and out. I don't know. But that was just something that struck me in the context of what's going on. There's more. There's always more to say, but I don't want to keep us past time unless people want to stick around for a couple minutes. So to wrap up, I really wanted to tie as pretty of a bow as I could on today and on this year. And one of the things that Asia Suler said in that recent email, she's the one I quoted at the very beginning about Samhain, is our ancestors have been here before. Yes, it's a weird time. Yes, it's unprecedented in our lifetimes and in, you know, probably in centuries. But those who came before us have been through pandemics. They've been through tyranny. They've been through a lot of the things that we're going through, you know, whether we consider it justified or not, you know, some of the restrictions. People that are in our history have been here before. And today, this time, actually for the next week, but because the astro-technical day of Samhain is not until the 7th of November, and that's when the sun is halfway through Scorpio. So this is a time when you can honor your ancestors, and there might be some rituals that you want to do for honoring this year, this age, this transition from one age to the other. And here were just some ideas I came up with. And if you follow a couple of the links and the resources, you might find others. Spend time in the dark. We don't do that anymore, right? We have electric light. We forget what it's like to be in the dark. And some of us may not think we're afraid of the dark, but we are, because we can't navigate anymore in the dark. Spend time in the dark. And it's not going to be painful tonight, because that moon is going to be pretty big and bright. Have a conversation with a wise and loving ancestor. And if that's something that's completely new to you, it's probably possible to find like some shamanic recordings or something that can help. The only caution I'll give you is that if you want to touch base with an ancestor, you want to make sure that it is a wise and loving ancestor, not, you know, your great, you know, relative who was a murderer or ex-murderer or rapist or whatever. You want to find, and you can just ask. You can just ask. I'd like to make contact with a wise and loving ancestor, somebody who's well. And if that's, you know, if this isn't something you've done before, maybe be a little more cautious about it, but there it is. Do something simple. Just write down on a piece of paper something that you don't find nourishing anymore. Maybe it's somewhere you're putting energy. Maybe it's some kind of work. Maybe it's something you're doing, and burn it. Burn it with a candle, you know, burn it over the sink. If you have access to a fire, burn it in a fire. Just do some kind of a releasing ceremony. If you're into tuning into the planetary energies, tune into Jupiter and Pluto. Focus on what you want to expand. See if you can find some way to use these energies constructively and consciously. Or make up your own ritual. Lots of people have ideas for full moon rituals. This was just something, you know, some things I came up with for fun. And then my last idea is get REM's song, It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine. Play it and dance like crazy. That's what I did yesterday as I was prepping for this. So that is the end of finally the end of my presentation. I see some of you hung in there with me. Thank you so much. If you have questions or comments or want to say something, you can certainly unmute yourselves. Anybody have anything they want to share or ask? Brianna, yeah, you can unmute yourself or I can do it. Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm understanding a little bit of what you're saying, it's a lot to take in. Thank you. This was amazing. A lot of beautiful, beautiful information and things I hadn't really, like an angle I hadn't heard before. But it sounds like with the Jupiter being squished in between those two and some of the other constraints, that that at least in November, or like until after December, it's less likely that there would be a big innovative change in direction.
I think that's very true. I don't think we're going to see, like some big, oh, everything's better and here's what we're going to do now for a while. And I think it actually is going to take probably several years for things to really shake out. And we probably won't really know all the meaning behind all this for a while.
And is there anything in all of this that, I'm not asking you to predict the future, but in terms of like the influences that you're looking at, is there anything that would suggest whether we're more likely to lean towards the immature dark version of this transition versus the more evolved light version?
Well, I think eventually we'll get to the conscious expression. But
what I was understanding is because we have South Node and Karma, that right. We're more likely to see the darker version of some of these things playing out in the immediate.
In the immediate, I think we'll see more of the darker sides, except for that, you know, when we get into that Aquarian time, the nodes are going the other way. So all the planets are moving into Aquarius, but the nodes are moving backwards to the zodiac. So that's one helpful thing. We've definitely been seeing the shadow of Capricorn, and now I think we're seeing some of the shadows of Sagittarius. But when all those big planets move into Aquarius, I think we really do have the opportunity to have the more conscious expression. And quite honestly, part of the reason I do what I do is that, to me, it's up to us as individuals, right? This is the whole principle of astrology and Ayurveda, which I also teach, is that the microcosm reflects the macrocosm. And you know, you and I are in Kasia Urbaniak's class together, and what she talks about is that inner alchemy. This is a time for us to be doing our inner alchemy. If we work through the dark and light and the conscious and unconscious in ourselves to the extent that we're capable and hold that higher intention, it makes a difference. It matters. Every one of us matters way more than we have any idea of. So that's,
yeah, I guess what I'm understanding too is, depending on your chart or sort of, you know, there's all these things can be happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
Like one group of people can be experiencing it this way and another group could be experiencing it that way. And it's not even about geography. It's about how this all impacts your own chart and sort of where you are in your spiritual development and all that sort of
right
good stuff. How willing you are, how surrendered you are.
All of the above. Yeah, absolutely.
One of my favorite teachers, Tosha Silver, says there are no bad transits. The divine can use any and every transit for the highest good.
Yeah, and in one, so, you know, it's an interesting discussion because from an Aquarian point of view, again, remember the shadow of that is like getting too detached and stuck out up here.
Spiritual bypass.
Yeah, spiritual bypassing. But from one point of view, everything is just fine. We're just living through a very epic cycle in the world. And you know, if we truly are at the end of Pisces and coming into the age of Aquarius, and, you know, if you go look at Vedic astrology, they say that we're in the Kali Yuga, which is the age of destruction, one of the dark ages. There's a golden age in our future, whether it's next year or 5 years from now or 500 years from now, I don't really know. I'm not sure anybody does. But we definitely will get to that conscious expression. It's a matter of when. And in the meantime, every one of us has the option of being there. No matter, and that again, that's Saturn, right? No matter how crappy life is, no matter how horribly you're being treated, you still have authority over your own life. And if you don't believe that, you can go read Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, and how he found meaning in the concentration camps of Hitler's Germany. We all have option. We have choice. Once we insource our Saturn, we have choice.
So, thank you.
Thanks for the platform for that little speech. Other questions or comments or thoughts?
Yeah, I relate also. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, to the Jupiter being squished between Pluto and Saturn. Yeah, it feels like there's this densification of energy and, yes. You know, just holding it and holding it and holding it. And some days I feel like I'm going to burst, but there's no release. But it also feels like there's this intensification, which I think you talked about, Capricorn is also crystallization. You know, it's almost like that pressure could create some kind of diamond of awareness, of wisdom, of consciousness. And it's like what I've been saying to my friends and my family all year long, you know, since January, we just got to hang together. You know, we got to stick together. We got to hold on to each other. We got to support each other. And, you know, it seems like we still have a dark passage to go through here. I don't think, you know, from, Election Day through Inauguration Day is going to be a very pretty time. But, you know, we just got to keep holding on and, like you say, doing our own inner work and supporting other people who are doing theirs and everybody else.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And the diamond, that contraction into a diamond is one of my favorite images for Saturn because it through pressure, and that's how diamonds are created.
Yep. Yeah.
Get to clarity. So yeah, I love that, Thomas. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. And I have to say, I could teach an entire class on that period between Election Day and Inauguration Day and shortly thereafter, because there's more wild astrology coming up, you know, not right. least, such as December's the solstice, but in Mercury right. direct on Election Day. And the last time that happened was in 1980 or no, 2000 when we had hanging chads.
When Mercury went direct on Election Day.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have hanging chads in spades probably this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's not to say we know what's going to happen. Everybody seems to be thinking they know the answer, but that's what happened last time. And I think we won't honestly know the answer right away, but I don't know.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Allison, did you have something else? I noticed you unmuted yourself.
Oh, I thought I was being anonymous. I just wanted to throw in this idea of the symbol of Pluto as being the crucible, to take the diamond of Saturn's pressure, but also the alchemical reaction in the Plutonian realm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the crucible of spirit cooking in the spirit cooking in the crucible of matter and material existence. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, unless there's another burning question, I'm going to call it a day. And thank you again. I really appreciate you all joining me. You'll get the recording probably tonight. If you don't get a recording within 48 hours or so, then definitely let me know, because that means you didn't make it onto my list somehow. But I think you're all there, and patrons are, it'll be posted in Patreon. So, all right.
Thank you, Christine.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you,
Christine. This is great.
I'm glad you were here. Take care.
All right.
Bye, Courtney.